So welcome to the Guiding Light. Whose version was that? Sorry, I wasn't looking at the screen. Gosh, and now I'd have to go back and look at her name because, you know, my mind doesn't hold on to anything. I already closed it, so I apologize. I can't tell you whose version it was. Oh, thank you. Eva Cassidy. That's it. That's it. It was Eva Cassidy. Yeah. So welcome to the Guiding Light, and we are looking at the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, and we're in a small section called Bhakti and Jnana. So we'll probably finish it tonight. I'm on page 56, and the question is, while making Nama Japa for an hour or more, I fall to a state like sleep. On waking up, I recollect that my japa has been interrupted. So I try again. Now, Nama Japa would be saying a mantra. You know, so for example, if we were following the guidance of the teachings of Inner Ramana, saying, I am that I am, for an hour. Or more, the questioner said, is referring to the time on those words, or concentrating on, even better, I would say, the stillness behind the words or between the words, and even better than that, the awareness that's aware of the words, right? But using the words as a tool. So while making Nama Japa for an hour or more, I fall into a state like sleep. Waking up, I recollect that my japa has been interrupted, so I try again. And this is Ramana Maharshi's response. Like sleep, that is right. It is the natural state. Because you are now associated with the ego, that's the natural state. Oh, sorry. Let me read that again. I put the emphasis in the wrong place, which changes the sentence. Because you are now associated with the ego, you consider that the natural state is something which interrupts your work. So you must have the experience repeated until you realize that it is your natural state. You will then find that japa is extraneous, but still it will go on. Your present doubt is due to that false identity, namely of identifying yourself with the mind that does the japa. Japa means clinging to one thought to the exclusion of all other thoughts. That is its purpose. It leads to dhyana, which ends in self-realization or jnana. And Diana, remember, was, I believe, devotion. Meditation with devotion. Yeah. That's how I always translate Diana as devotion, but it's a meditative devotion. So what we're really looking at in this section called Bhakti and Jnana is we're looking at the fact that Ramana Maharshi did not only teach self-inquiry, which seems to be a false understanding in the world today. Many people who think they know Ramana Maharshi also think that he only taught self-inquiry. But that is not true. He pointed towards the self. And he really recognized two practices as most helpful. One was self-inquiry, but the other was devotion. And, you know, saying the name of God repeatedly would be a type of devotion. Surrendering to God or Guru would be another type of devotion. So really, Ramana Maharshi saw surrender, saying a mantra, and self-inquiry as all equal tools. And it's interesting because, of course, he taught all three of those tools in the teachings of Vinaya Ramana. And as you all know, this is before I knew Ramana Maharshi. I was not really, didn't really know anything about Ramana Maharshi as a guru, as a teacher. So it's interesting that these are the three practices that show up in the teachings of Vinaya Ramana. And these are the three practices that he encouraged, even though most people are unaware of it. Most people seem to think that self-inquiry was his only practice. I would say that really his practice, if we get down deep at looking at what the practice was that he recommended, ignoring thought. And three tools that we can use to ignore thought are surrender, which Jacqueline talked about this morning, saying a mantra, and self-inquiry. Those are three means of ignoring thought. And really ignoring thought was the true teaching of Ramana Maharshi. Because when we give attention to thought, we are enlivening the false self. In fact, John mentioned that this morning as well. She talked about how the thinking is all about the I, right? It's all about me. Or at least it's about my point of view, how I see others, how I see the world. So ultimately, thinking is all about I. And of course, if we're giving all of our attention to thinking, which is all about I, then we are using our attention, or attention is made from awareness. So we could say we are using our awareness to reinforce the false self. And of course, Ramana Maharshi pointed towards truth realization, or capital S, self realization. Giving attention to the problem, removing attention from the answer. And again, he taught three tools, what he's most famous for, suffering. And he certainly probably taught it the most. And I can't even take the probably. He certainly taught self inquiry the most. But he also taught devotion as surrender, and devotion as saying a mantra, as equal means. And again, the reason they are equal is because they really accomplish the same task, which is ignoring thought. The questioner says, how should I carry on Nama Japa? Ramana Maharshi says, one should not use the name of God mechanically and superficially without the feeling of devotion. To use the name of God, one must call upon him with yearning and unreservedly surrender oneself to him. Only after such surrender is the name of God constantly with the man. So there we go. He's mentioning surrender, and he's also mentioning the devotion. What I'm going to do is go ahead and grab the teachings of Vinaya Ramana, and I'm going to open up to the section where he teaches us how to say a mantra. Page 13, instructions for using the mantra. All right, so this is from the teachings of Vinaya Ramana. Today, let's talk about the practice of the mantra and how this practice is best used to quiet the mind. The quieting of mind is essential to awakening or to realization of the true self. Jacqueline read this part this morning. This is because thinking acts as a blanket that covers the true self and hides it completely from view. Therefore, it makes sense that if one is to realize the true self, he must remove the blanket. This is the purpose of the mantra. When it is not used fully to remove the blanket completely, it can still be used partially to enable one to have peaks beneath the blanket. And so what this particular questioner is talking about is he used it partially and he had peaks beneath the blanket. Because to say a mantra fully would be something like Ram Dass did. Ram Dass, not Richard Alpert, I think that's his name, the American Ram Dass, but Ram Dass, who was his guru, who he took his name from, who was an Indian guru, right? Yeah, that's cool, Kathy. Both P-E-E-K-S and P-E-A-K-S works as peaks beneath the blanket. Ram Dass, the guru of Richard Alpert, used the mantra all the time. He, you know, from the time he woke up to the time he went to bed, he stayed with the mantra. So that would be using the mantra fully. What the questioner is doing is he uses the mantra partially because he uses it for an hour or more. Right, he's not living, saying the mantra all of the time. And what Ramana Maharshi is saying is even if you use it partially, such as the questioner is doing, an hour to an hour and a half solid a day, that will give you these peaks beneath the blanket. So this is the purpose of the mantra. When it is not used fully to remove the blanket completely, it can still be to enable the blanket peaceful, valuable, in fact, to the realization of the true self, because they help one realize the goal in a very deep way. This increases the desire to strive for the goal through devotion and practice. So our purpose is to quiet the mind as much as possible. And it is also our purpose to quiet the mind in a sincere way, which is different than quieting the mind through denial or fear. Let me teach you how to use the mantra. And he has four guidelines or rules for how to use the mantra. So the first rule of following the practice of mantra is you will use the mantra as often as you remember. Try to avoid remembering the use of mantra and still choosing not to use it. Resistance may come into the mind in this way. The reminder of mantra may appear, and then a thought that you are too busy in the moment to do it properly, and so it is better to do it later. That is nonsense. If the reminder of the mantra has come into the mind now, then now is the perfect time to do it. The second rule of practicing the mantra is it can be done with eyes open or eyes closed. Eyes closed can help to bring full focus to the mantra. But if one is involved in an activity such as driving when the reminder comes to do the mantra, the restrictions brought about by the activity are not limiting to the usefulness of the mantra. So basically what he's saying is if we're driving and the reminder comes to do the mantra, obviously we don't close our eyes while driving, nor do we listen to a thought that might say, oh, I can't close my eyes now, I'll do the mantra later. We go ahead and we do the mantra with eyes open, eyes on the road, right? So again, the first rule was use the mantra as often as you remember. The second rule is it can be done with eyes open or eyes closed. Eyes closed, you know, is very good, but if it's not possible to close the eyes, that's not an excuse for not doing the mantra. We just do it with the eyes open. Rule three is to practice the mantra with love and devotion, which of course is what he is telling the questioner now, right? Rule three is to practice the mantra with love and devotion. Say the mantra from the heart. I have told you that the mantra is a gift of awakening. Cherish it as a very precious gift. In the moments that you give to the mantra, give with the love that you would give to the most precious of all gifts. So imagine that, you know, the reminder comes in to do the mantra. Again, just like he's saying to the questioner right now, you don't do it mechanically. You don't go, oh yeah, I am that I am, right? You give it the love and devotion of the most precious of gifts. You know, if possible, you close your eyes. I used to like to even pause before I said the mantra. I would pause. I am that I am. Really feel gratitude for it, and gratitude for all of the silence around it, and gratitude for the awareness that's aware of the mantra, right? Cherish it as a very precious gift. In the moments that you give to the mantra, give with the love that you would give to the most precious of all gifts. The mantra is a practice of devotion and discipline. And he defines devotion as love and discipline as consistency. Again, saying it every time you remember to say it, not saying it mechanically, saying it with love, right? Doing that very, very consistently. That is discipline. The mantra is a practice of devotion or love and discipline or consistency. But let the heart focus on love. Discipline is the decision to practice the mantra every time you remember. But love is the way to practice. Again, that's what he's telling our questioner now. Not to do it mechanically. Do it with devotion, right? Rule 4 is that you be willing to stay in the stillness of the mantra. Before the reminder of the mantra appeared, the mind may have been busy with world-based thoughts. You are not taking a break from thoughts when you say the mantra and then quickly returning to the world. You are using the mantra to let go of thoughts because they have no real importance. You are releasing your attachment to illusion and returning the mind to the heart, which is peace and stillness and willingness to listen only to me. So again, not mechanically, not, you know, thinking. Oh yeah, mantra. See, what is that mantra again? Oh yeah, I am that I am. Okay, now, thinking, right? That's not the way to do it, right? It's more like this, thinking. A reminder to say the mantra. Maybe a deep breath in preparation for something so holy. Pause in the silence of gratitude for this opportunity to do something so holy. Full attention. I am that I am. Followed by lingering in the silence that follows. Right? This is the practice of the mantra, done in love and with great and joyous willingness. The benefit to realization is also great. The mantra is, I am that I am. So again, those 4 rules or guidelines. You will use the mantra as often as you remember. It can be done with eyes open or eyes closed. Practice the mantra with love and devotion. Be willing to stay in the stillness of the mantra. So that's from the teachings of Inner Ramana. And I'm going to return now to the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And again, the question was, how should I carry on Nama Japa, which is the saying of a mantra? Ramana Maharshi says, one should not use the name of God mechanically and superficially without a feeling of devotion. To use the name of God, one must call upon him with yearning and unreservedly surrender oneself to him. Only after such surrender is the name of God constantly with the man. And just now when I read that, it came to me that in this case, the word surrender is the same as staying in the quiet that follows the mantra, staying with awareness, right? And then opening your eyes and going on with activity, but without returning to thinking. You stay in the silence, stay in the surrender. The devotee says, where then is the need for inquiry or vaikara? And of course, this is referring to self-inquiry. And Ramana Maharshi says, surrender can take effect only when it is done with full knowledge as to what real surrender means. Such knowledge comes after inquiry and reflection and ends invariably in self-surrender. There is no difference between jnana and absolute surrender to the Lord, that is, in thought, word, and deed. To be complete, surrender must be unquestioning. The devotee cannot bargain with the Lord or demand favors at his hands. Such entire surrender comprises all. It is jnana and this is maybe a different term of vaikara, but it has a different word, so I'll look it up in a second. It's Viagra, actually. It looks like Viagra. I'll call it Viagra. Such entire surrender comprises all. It is jnana and Viagra, devotion and love. So let me look up this Viagra, and see if it's the same as Vaikara. Okay. It's not, yeah, it's not the same as Vaikara. Because Vaikara is self-inquiry. This is actually kind of funny because you all know what Viagra is. Okay, this is not Viagra. This is Vaikara, and it's dispassion or non-attachment, which is kind of the opposite of what people use Viagra for. So, Viagra, however you say it, Viagra, is dispassion and non-attachment. So let's read this again. He says, such entire surrender comprises all. It is jnana, which we'll call inquiry, and viagra, which we'll call non-attachment, devotion, and love. So surrender comprises all. It is self-inquiry. It is non-attachment. It is devotion. And it is love. So that's an interesting sentence, again, considering that most people who feel they know Ramana Maharshi say that self-inquiry was his only teaching. Here he seems to be teaching surrender as an umbrella. You know, like if you're really surrendered, all of these other things fall underneath it. And in fact, somewhere in the teachings of Inner Ramana, what he said to me is that all practices actually end in surrender. You know, like surrender is the ultimate action. And if you think about it, that has to be true, because we're talking about surrendering the ego, right? If I'm not willing to surrender the ego, it doesn't really matter if I practice self-inquiry, if I practice a mantra, if I'm, quote, non-attached, if I have love, devotion, if I'm still clinging to the ego, self-realization will not occur. So surrender is actually the ultimate act. Self-inquiry is a tool, right? But surrender is the ultimate act. Kathy says that's what the second sentence says too. Let's read it. Yeah, such knowledge comes after inquiry and reflection and ends invariably in self-surrender. So, again, it's kind of interesting. I think I mentioned last week that every now and then somebody will write to me about the teachings of Inner Ramana. And, you know, it only happens a couple of times a year. But, you know, again, they think they know Ramana Maharshi. And they comment that what's in the teachings of Inner Ramana is not his teaching. And I mentioned I have no desire to debate with anyone or convince them of anything. So I write back with an answer that says something like, well, this was just the inner teacher as Ramana Maharshi, not Ramana Maharshi. You know, because there's a truth to that statement too, right? Because really Ramana Maharshi is the inner teacher. Whether it seemed to be the body of Ramana Maharshi or whether it comes within, you know, there's, as A Course in Miracles says, there's really only one teacher. right? There's one teacher, and it comes through many bodies. But, you know, I always think it's funny because I just feel they must not have deeply looked at or contemplated Ramana Maharshi's work. Because when I look at the words of the, you know, the man, Ramana Maharshi, and I read what he's saying slowly and carefully, I find the exact same teachings as the teachings of Inner Ramana. So I'm not sure where this idea that those aren't his teachings comes from, except that, again, people focus on self-inquiry as the only thing that he taught, and that just doesn't appear to be true. And in fact, what we're seeing here is that surrender is the ultimate practice, right? Surrender is the ultimate, not only practice, surrender is the ultimate act. If you don't get to surrendering the false self, surrendering the ego, you also do not get to self-realization. So again, this really complements Jacqueline's teaching from this morning. So this answer, surrender can take effect only when it is done with full knowledge as to what real surrender means. Such knowledge comes after inquiry. I'm going to pause there for a moment because he continues. But, you know, many of us have ideas about God, ideas about truth, and you know, I think a lot of people probably think they're practicing surrender when what they're really surrendering to are their own concepts. Let me give you an example. You know, the Christians who are anti-gay. You know, like if you, like there was a, I think it was a, here in Colorado, but it ended up being national news, but there was a baker, I think in Colorado, who refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple. And of course that went all the way to the Supreme Court. I don't even really remember what the outcome was, but it was pretty big news. But you know that this baker thought he was surrendering to his God, right? His God in his mind, you know, in the mind of his, you know, probably his peers as well, his God despised homosexuality. And so he was following the will of his God, surrendering to his God by refusing to bake a cake for these two gay men who are going to be married. You see, that's just surrendering to concepts. So what Ramana Maharshi is saying is, you know, you don't actually surrender the ego in that type of surrender, right? So you have to know what the heck surrender is. Otherwise, you may think you're surrendering when you're really just clinging to your point of view, clinging to your ego. So he says that self-inquiry helps you to know what real surrender is, right? And again, when we practice self-inquiry, what we do is we turn our attention around to awareness, to emptiness, to no point of view, right? And if we practice self-inquiry frequently, and if we turn our attention around to that no point of view, to that awareness, emptiness, no point of view, right? Well, then we could not be confused by thinking that we're surrendered by not baking a cake for two gay men, right? That kind of confusion could not occur. You know, two gay men or any other people walk into my bakery, whether they're getting married or not, and request a wedding cake, you know, and I just make it. Because that's what a baker does. There's no opinion. There's no point of view. There's no judgment as to whether this is an appropriate time to make a wedding cake or not an appropriate time to make a wedding cake, you know. So Ramana Maharshi is saying that the way self-inquiry fits with surrender is through self-inquiry, you come to understand what real surrender is, right? What real surrender is, the surrender to emptiness, the surrender to no point of view, the surrender to awareness, being life awareness, abiding as life awareness. And in fact, I mentioned a moment ago that when reading the paragraph above, and he said, one should not use the name of God mechanically and superficially without the feeling of devotion. To use the name of God, one must call upon him with yearning and unreservedly surrender oneself to him. I told you that what I was getting was what that meant was the staying in the silence. Right? The staying in the silence. So if I'm a baker and two gay men walk into my bakery, my shop, and order a wedding cake because they're getting married. You know, maybe I was raised Christian, and maybe some chatter starts in my mind about, you know, I can't believe, you know, homosexuals are marrying now. That's, you know, that's a sin. But if I'm now practicing self-inquiry, you know, if I'm transitioning away from that old thought system, the way I'm going to respond to that is by asking myself, you know, what sees these thoughts? And what's aware of this conditioning? What am I? Then I come to the silence. And I surrender myself to the silence. And I open my eyes and I look these two men in the eyes and I smile. And I say, what kind of cake would you like? You know, chocolate, almond, vanilla. You know, I lay out my wedding cake book and let them pick their cake, right? You see, that's surrender. Clinging to a point of view is the opposite of surrender. So again, looking at the most recent answer that we're looking at the bottom of page 56, surrender can take effect only when it is done with full knowledge as to what real surrender means. Such knowledge comes after inquiry and reflection, right? Reflection in this case to me is the same as contemplation. And if we've had peaks under the blanket, right? If we've been able to practice self-inquiry or say the name of God mantra, or anything else, awareness, watching, awareness, meditation, so that we have had actual tastes, actual glimpses of our true self. Even though those glimpses seem to die out when the mind comes back, we can contemplate. We can reflect on the glimpses. They're very powerful, and that to some degree they stay in the memory, not to the degree of the actual experience. Memory is never the same as the actual experience. But to some degree they stay in the memory, and we can actually reflect on them. You know, and we can continue to play those types of games that I teach using the Rupert Spira book, where we're looking again towards that which we glance, you know, like what is here that is constant? What is here that is unchanging? What is it that sees these thoughts? What is it that sees these emotions? What am I? And of course, again, that's still self-inquiry. So in that way, you could say that contemplation and self-inquiry, or reflection and self-inquiry, are the same thing. Except the only difference is the contemplation of the true self, or the reflection on the true self, begins after a glimpse has occurred. Otherwise, you would just be contemplating or reflecting on concepts, ideas. So the self-inquiry has to come first. You practice the self-inquiry to the point that you begin to have glimpses. And then you contemplate or reflect on those glimpses and continue to practice self-inquiry. And so you get more and more of the glimpses. The glimpses last longer and longer. They become more and more stable. And eventually they seem to move into the foreground of your experience rather than staying underneath the blanket. Right? So, surrender can take effect only when it is done with full knowledge as to what real surrender means. Such knowledge comes after inquiry and reflection. Such knowledge as to what real surrender really means comes after inquiry and reflection. So you've practiced inquiry, you've had these glimpses, you reflected on these glimpses. Now you know what the true self is, or if you want to use this language, what God is, what the Lord is, what the truth is, right? And so now you have the knowledge of what you are surrendering into. Some people would call it dying into. Such knowledge comes after inquiry and reflection and ends invariably in self-surrender. That would be the total surrender of the ego. By getting glimpses of that which you surrender to, by practicing to the best of your ability, eventually it invariably ends in the total surrender of the ego, the dying into God. And that is self-realization. Ramana Maharshi continues, there is no difference between jnana, which is the path of wisdom, which is self-inquiry, and absolute surrender to the Lord, that is, in thought, word, and deed. So that's something that's nice to contemplate and reflect on. How do I surrender to the Lord, or surrender to the stillness, or surrender to awareness, in thought, word, and deed? And I think that in the teachings of Inner Ramana, in the message that Connie read this morning, he is teaching us the beginning steps in how to do that, right? By asking the questions, what am I to do now? How am I to see this? What am I to think? Right? By asking those questions, waiting for the intuitive prompt, we are learning to surrender in thought, word, and deed. But that is just a beginning step. Because what we're surrendering to, and I discovered this through my own practice of the surrender and the teachings of Inner Ramana, and anyone else who hasn't discovered it, you will discover it on your own as well. But what we're surrendering to when we ask, you know, what am I to do now, is we are surrendering to the script without thought or point of view. What do I mean by we're surrendering to the script? Well, you all know the code for NTI Ephesians. You know that as we give attention to thought, motion, and perception, that inputs into the creative principle, and then what comes out of the creative principle is what I'm going to call script. And that script has different vibrational levels, right? Lower vibrational levels, which are completely ego, and higher vibrational levels, which are completely right mind. And what happens when you let go of your ego, your thought, and you just surrender to the script, surrender, it's the higher vibration that comes in and guides you. So you're guided by the higher vibration, because through asking, what am I to do now, you are not giving attention to ego thought, ego emotion, or ego perception. So you're surrendering to the script. What comes is the highest vibration, and then you are moved by that. And eventually what happens is you no longer need to ask, what am I to do now? You merely need to stay in the silence, stay in awareness, stay in abiding as the self, and that same higher vibrational script moves you without the asking. So the asking is, I'm going to call it beginning level. When, you know, it says, Jacqueline read this morning, you know, when you're at a point where you can still be confused, that's when the asking needs to occur. But of course, when you get to where you're abiding as the self, abiding in the silence, abiding as awareness, that script is just going to move you and you don't need to ask anymore, right? So there is no difference between jnana and absolute surrender to the Lord, that is in thought, word, and deed. So whether you're practicing self-inquiry, or whether you're practicing what am I to do now, and following that, it's the same. Why is it the same? Because in both instances, you are not giving attention to thought. And that's the real goal. That's the real path. Right? There is no difference between jnana, or self-inquiry, and absolute surrender to the Lord. That is, in thought, word, and deed. To be complete, surrender must be unquestioning. So what doesn't work? If you really want to reach self-realization through surrender, what doesn't work is to ask, what am I to do now? And the thought arises, go make the bed. And you say, you know what, I think I'd rather check the mail. You know, there might be a check out there. That's a whole lot more important to me. The bed can wait. It's not going to work. Why? Well, when you decided, I'd rather check the mail, there's a check coming. That's important to me. Where did your attention go? It went to the thought. It went to the false self. You see? It went to me. Yeah. So partial surrender, or surrendering where you question or judge. Okay, well, I know what I received. Now, do I want to do that? It's not going to work. It has to be total if it's going to work. To be complete, surrender must be unquestioning. Now, listen to this next one. The devotee cannot bargain with the Lord or demand favors at his hands. Now, this is something else that's really important. You know, I have seen this done a lot. Where people have the belief or the idea that if they surrender, they'll get what they want. Right? If I surrender to God, I will get the check in the mail. You know, if I surrender to God, He'll make sure I'm financially secure. When you surrender to God, it isn't to get anything. I remember Elie Ruzdar talking about that. You're not attempting to get anything. You're surrendering for surrender's sake alone. Right? Because truth is important to you, and surrender is a path, or at least part of your path, to truth realization. So to be complete, surrender must be unquestioning. The devotee cannot bargain with the Lord or demand favors at his hands. Such entire surrender comprises all. Right? If you surrender this fully, right, you're surrendering in thought, word, and deed, in an unquestioning way, and you're not expecting anything as a favor or in return for your surrender, such entire surrender comprises all. It is jnana, or self-inquiry. It is non-attachment. It is devotion. It is love. And that's the end of this particular section, which is called Bhakti and Jnana, which leaves us with 11 minutes left. And, you know, I don't like to start a new section. So I'm going to find some music. I'll just take a moment. I had closed down my browser. And everybody in Pueblo West can tell you the internet is not fast here. All right, let's see what song I want to play. I might play a couple because we have enough time, right? I'm going to try this one. This one is called Until Only I Am. It's by Shivali and Soham, and it's a song sung to Muji.
Until only I. All right.
And I'm going to move directly into another song, which we won't have time to finish, but it's very repetitive. So when time is up, I'll just slowly turn it down. This is written by Michael Singer, and it's called If You Knew How Much I Love You. Much for joining with me as we looked again at surrender, both this morning and this evening we've looked at it. So maybe somebody's trying to talk to us. Bye.